Welcome to the Higher Education Policy and Finance Division remote hearing, held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. A few reminders before we get started. Committee staff will be muting and unmuting as we go. That will be announced throughout the meeting. We must stick to the time allotted for this hearing, so we will be adjourning at 4 p.m. Testifiers and members, please be mindful of time. We will be taking all votes by roll call, except for the minutes, starting with taking attendance so we know who is on the call. Staff will unmute the line. The clerk will now take the roll.
Chair Bernardi?
Present.
Vice Chair Pryor?
Present.
Representative Nornick?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Present.
Representative Franson? Representative Franson?
Oh, speaking. Here.
Representative Gomez?
Present.
Representative Cleavorn?
Present.
Representative Lehman? Representative Lehman?
Present.
Representative Lean?
Present.
Representative Lilly?
Present.
Representative Lucero?
Present.
Representative Poppy?
Present.
Representative Quam?
Present.
Representative Runbeck?
Present.
Representative Bang?
Present.
Representative Voldemort?
Present.
And Representative Zhang?
Present.
Chair Bernardi, the roll is complete and the quorum is present. I will now lock this conference.
Conference locked. A quorum is present. Staff will now mute the lines. Also present on the call are our committee staff, Don Williams, House Research, Ken Savory, House Fiscal Analyst, Bennett Smith, DFL Research, Callie Lehman, GOP Research, Addie Miller, Committee Administrator, and Eric Peterson, Committee Legislative Assistant. We have testifiers on the line as well. Public notice was given, and members of the public who wish to testify have contacted staff and are on this call. President Joan Gable and Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations, Brian Burnett, from the University of Minnesota. Chancellor Devinder Malhotra and Vice Chancellor Bill Mackey from the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. President Rebecca Bergman from the Minnesota Private College Council. As we proceed, if you have a question or wish to be recognized, please email or text the committee administrator and I will recognize you. The first order of business is to approve the minutes from our meeting on April 15, 2020. Staff will unmute Vice Chair Pryor to make the motion. Vice Chair Pryor, would you like to move the minutes for April 15, 2020?
So moved.
The committee administrator will now announce any members who wish to be recognized for discussion on the minutes.
Madam Chair and members, there are no requests.
Vice Chair Pryor moves the minutes of April 15, 2020. Staff will unmute the lines. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. The motions The motion carries and the minutes are approved. Staff will now mute the line. Today we have presentations from our higher education systems on the impacts this pandemic has had on their operations, the fiscal losses, and what we can expect moving forward. We will have each of the three systems present one at a time, and we will take questions at the end of each system's testimony. If at any time you have a question, please get your name in the queue by emailing or texting the committee administrator. First, we have President Bergman from Gustavus Adolphus College on behalf of the Minnesota Private Colleges Council. Staff will unmute her line.
Thank you.
President Bergman, please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you may proceed.
This is Rebecca Bergman, president at Gustavus Adolphus College. Just for the record, I'd like to let the committee know that I am deeply grateful for this opportunity. Thank you to the committee and to the state of Minnesota for your leadership during this difficult time throughout the state and for all of the institutions of higher education. To give you just a little bit more background, this is my sixth year as president of Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, Minnesota. We are one of 17 schools that are part of the Minnesota Private College Council. Prior to being president at Gustavus, I was an executive at Medtronic and led research and development in various roles with the company. So I have an interesting background with respect to a situation like COVID-19 with both business and background in my career. I'd like to particularly acknowledge committee member Representative Samantha Fang, who is a Gustavus graduate, class 2016. She was recently named as the winner of the Minnesota Campus Compact Alumni Leadership Award nominated by Gustavus. So congratulations to Representative Zhang. I previously testified on COVID-19 in front of the Minnesota Senate Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee on Tuesday, March 10th, and appreciated that opportunity as well. Since that day, much has changed in the landscape of higher education in our state. As an example specific to Gustavus, on March 13th, we suspended in-person classes and announced a transition to online learning. At the time, we felt that would be a short excursion into online learning. We also recalled all of our study abroad students at that time. On March 17th, only 4 days later, we extended online learning through the remainder of the spring semester. The transition has actually gone very well for Gustavus, both for our students and our faculty, and we see high levels of engagement, even though this is very unusual for a residential liberal arts college to go online. We're used to small class sizes, face-to-face interactions, and we do that in a residential setting, in normal operations. We have approximately 70 students who have remained on campus with us living here. More than half of those are international students who either couldn't go home, shouldn't go home, or were worried about being able to come back next fall. The rest are domestic students who are here for a variety of reasons, some because they have no home. In other words, they're homeless. Some because of food security issues, some because of lack of technology in their homes that would be sufficient for online learning. And then we also have a variety of students who have COVID-related family members with health vulnerabilities that would not be smart for our students to go home. So anyway, for us, that's 70 out of about 2,300 students who have remained on campus. Today, we are continuing to manage the COVID-19 disruption for the spring semester, and we are beginning very deliberate planning about summer programming and fall instruction. And as you might guess, because of all the high levels of uncertainty related to COVID, we are facing many questions about what the fall will look like. Our first priority, as always, remains the safety and well-being of all members of the Gustavus community, students and employees. Now let me talk about the financial impact to date for COVID in the spring and summer for Gustavus, and then I'll give you some information that generalizes these comments for the Minnesota Private College Council. Our impact for spring and summer is about $6 million. $4 million of that is relates to refunds and credits that we have offered our students for housing and meals. So about $2.6 million for housing, $1.3 million for meals, and a small amount to refund students for parking fees. We forecast a net revenue loss of another $1.3 million for the summer due to possible cancellation of our summer camp and loss of other revenue streams in the summer. And then there's an additional $700,000 of other costs and lost revenue, including our bookstore, dining service, miscellaneous costs related to technology, and study abroad costs bring our students back. Altogether, for Gustavus, $6 million of impact. I would also note that early in the process, back in March, we made the decision to continue to pay all of our employees, about 700 people, their full wages and benefits through the end of the academic year, in other words, through the end of May. We are now making decisions about how we'll proceed through the summer with employment for all of our employees. Now, across the Minnesota private colleges, we have collected specific data from COVID-19 Minnesota privates, and if we use that as typical, we believe that lost revenue and total costs will reach about $70 million. That's an average of about $4.5 million in costs and lost revenue for each of the 17 private colleges. One question I have heard quite frequently is the impact of the Federal CARES Act, which we are very grateful for that as a bit of help for us. It is not a silver bullet. Not including the 50% share that we need to give directly to the students, the Federal CARES Act has paid out a total of $12.65 million to the 12 Minnesota private colleges who have reported their data. Gustavus is actually getting about $1 million in that half of the CARES Act funding. The student portion of the CARES Act, we are using, for example, to give students grants for the portion of their fees that were through student employment on campus. So we are refunding or giving to students a grant in the amount of the lost employment that they would have had had they been here for the remainder of the spring semester. In general, I would say that the CARES Act is covering less than 25% of the expected costs and losses to the private colleges and universities. This is not easy financially, as you could imagine, but I believe all the colleges, and Gustavus in particular, is managing through the spring, and we are prepared to manage through the summer. The big and looming question for all of us, the colleges and universities in the private sector, the big question we're facing is what will the fall semester look like? And we don't know yet. As we think about fall planning, it is our current intention and our goal to have students on campus taking regular classes this fall. We know that this will likely look different than what we are used to. We're looking at how we utilize classroom space so that we can hold classes in rooms that would have twice the capacity on an occupancy basis compared to our typical use. So in other words, arrange for distancing within the classroom. We're looking at calendar flexibility to see how we might be able to flex the calendar in order to be together as much as possible on campus. For example, Gustavus has a January term, which we could use as a flex time to extend the fall semester or to begin the spring semester early and end early earlier in the spring, or use that time to give students a break off campus without having to go to online instruction. We are looking at expanding the class day to offer more late afternoon and evening classes, as well as the possibility of weekend classes. And we're, of course, exploring various hybrid models where classes might take place in person one or two times a week and online the other class periods during the week. And there are many other questions, questions about athletics, how we'll handle co-curricular activities, how we'll handle residential living, how we'll handle our cafeteria, and in general, how we handle any confirmed COVID-19 case on campus and appropriate contact tracing if and when that happens. In general, we are also looking at how we protect both students and employees who have vulnerable health conditions or are immune compromised. And we are looking at how we can manage with those students on campus or off campus if that would be the right thing for them to do. So we're carefully watching our enrollment numbers for incoming students. As of today, Gustavus is tracking pretty well compared to the previous 2 years, but I know that enrollment and subsequently the tuition revenue related to enrollment are the lifeblood of private liberal arts colleges. And we see a variety of success across the state in how well that is going. So let me conclude with a few other statements. We believe it's in the state's interest that Minnesota private colleges and universities continue to thrive through this entire COVID-19 situation. Minnesota private colleges award approximately 30% of the bachelor's degrees in the state. That compares to about 33% for the University of Minnesota system and 33% for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Our institutions do this without receiving regular public funding. However, I would be remiss if I did not state publicly here how much we appreciate the Minnesota State grant funding that our students receive. Our private colleges and universities combine to employ approximately 14,000 faculty and staff. This makes us collectively the ninth largest private sector employer in the state and the 13th largest overall employer when you include the public sector organizations. If this situation continues, colleges may be forced to make very difficult decisions about course offerings, number of employees, and financial aid awards to students. I think it's clear that most of these colleges in Minnesota, and I would hesitate to say that any would be exempt from this statement, we are all very tuition dependent. Tuition depends on enrollment, and so enrollment is really the key factor for all of us as we look at the future. I'd like to thank the Minnesota Department of Health for their leadership and support throughout this pandemic. They have been thoughtful, responsive, and thorough in their communications with the Minnesota private colleges and universities, and in fact, with all of higher education in the state. We remain optimistic. In Minnesota, good people are working together to solve all these problems, and I am very proud of how we're doing it in the spirit of community and care for one another. And once again, let me please reinforce that in my conversations with the Minnesota private college presidents, we are all optimistic and we are all hopeful about having students on campus and learning in person at the beginning of the fall semester. At the same time, we are prepared to make adjustments as needed in relation to the state or other restrictions that we feel are appropriate for our campuses. We will do all we do in a safe and healthy manner as our number one priority. Thank you for this opportunity, and I return to Chair Bernardi.
Thank you very much for your testimony, President Bergman. Now we would like to recognize, our committee administrator will recognize any of our members who have a question and who wish to be recognized.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Pryor wishes to be recognized.
Thank you. Vice Chair, staff will unmute Representative Vice, well, I should say Vice Chair Pryor's.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So a little bit the discussion was out there, but I realized that President Bergman was talking about her campus, and I'm wondering at this point, are the private colleges, the nonprofit private colleges, also communicating more frequently now since? And sharing best practices, is there any kind of coordination in working, you know, having the same kind of policies that seem to go forward, or is it some discussion but individual action and individual choices depending on the needs of the particular campus?
President Bergman.
Thank you for the good question, Chair Bernardi and Vice Chair Pryor. Here's how we're working at this point. The presidents are meeting, as probably wouldn't be a surprise to you, on video conferencing. We are discussing how we can appropriately work together and collaborate on best practices without falling into any difficulties related to the fact that we are competitors. We're being appropriately careful not to discuss financial matters. However, how we handle residential living with several thousand students on most of our campus is an area where we believe we are benefiting greatly from working together on that. So, yes, we are working together in all areas where we believe that, you know, we're all basically forging new ground here with respect to things like health service and medical monitoring, how we're communicating, residential life, and technology, how we're handling new technology needs and formats for our students.
Thank you. Madam Chair, may I ask a follow-up?
Sure. Go ahead, Vice Chair Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So another area that I think I'm interested in from what you said, and I think this will be true for the university and our state university system, right now you said you do have students on campus, and I think that there are students on campuses at the other systems also. This is also congregate living right now, and I'm wondering how, you know, if I thank you for the mention of the Department of Health and working with the Department of Health, but this area of private information such as testing positive for COVID-19, is that something that you would be aware of on your campuses, and is it something that what is the practice right now in being made aware of that? Thank you.
Chair Bernardi and Vice Chair Pryor, good question. We have the benefit at Gustavus, and I think this is true for a number of our campuses, of having a health service experts on our campus. And first of all, let me say that 70 students compared to a normal census of about 2,300 on our campus means that these 70 students are spread out in, they're not in congregate living. Let me just say that. Although come fall, we clearly would be in that category. We have asked students to report to us, but it's completely optional because of healthcare privacy, that we would that we would know if our students have COVID. Once they're on campus, and we have not yet written all the protocols, we expect to do more intense medical monitoring for our students. And here again, we're lucky to have a healthcare service on our campus so that there can be confidential conversations with students without that being known to others.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. That's all questions for me.
Okay, thank you. And then I'd like to ask our committee administrator if we have any more on the list and how many we do. I'm needed to manage time here.
Madam Chair, there are no further requests.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And I do have a question myself. And one of them that we asked about is wondering what kind of reserves you have, and how are the colleges like reallocating resources and reprioritizing funds? How is that being addressed to cover the deficit and the loss of revenue that you're experiencing?
Chair Bernardi, thank you for the question. We have an endowment, as most colleges and universities do. So one of the difficulties for us is that most endowment dollars are restricted for specific purposes and are not generally available as reserves. We do not have any state reserves in the private institutions as the public institutions would have. Our endowment was about $200 million because that was we dropped to about $175 million in mid-March. That's come back a little bit. We're watching that closely right now. So we have a substantial endowment. We try not to overdraw from our endowment because that would be irresponsible fiscally. However, these are unusual circumstances, and we're working with our board for the ways in which we could do an additional draw from our endowment to cover portion of the shortfall. We're also concerned that we depend heavily on unrestricted funds through charitable donations, and we do not know at this point how the economic downturn might impact the ability of our donors to contribute unrestricted funds. So we do have budget challenges, that is clear. And we're looking, I believe, across the colleges at the possibility of furloughs or pay reductions or, I think at the worst extreme, layoffs of employees. Our goal, I guess, Davis, is to, if we need to do short-term furloughs, that we would be expecting to have a full complement of employees back with us in the fall, assuming that we have students here on campus with us.
Thank you. Okay, we appreciate your testimony today and appreciate your leadership. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You are welcome. We're now going to move to...
Hey, Bernardi.
Yes, Committee Administrator Miller.
Hi, sorry, Madam Chair, members. Representative Cleavorn wishes to be recognized.
Okay, we'll take one more question. And Representative Cleavorn, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. And this is really just kind of a general statement. I heard the president state that the private colleges are without receiving regular public funding. And I just want to address that topic for just one second. It really doesn't require a response from the president, but it is something that I think we always need to be cognizant of. When we give tax advantage to private colleges and private institutions, whether through the tax code, those are, in fact, expenditures that are made by the state in choosing not to collect those revenues that would come in otherwise. So there is a substantial tax benefit that goes to our private colleges, and I just want to make sure that that is recognized as a source of public funding that does go to them. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we are going to move on to Minnesota State. We have Chancellor Devinder Malhotra and Vice Chancellor Bill Mackey and from the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Staff will unmute the Chancellor and Vice Chancellor lines. Yes, we can. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you may proceed.
Chair Bernardi, committee members, for the record, I am Devinder Malhotra, Chancellor of Minnesota State, and with me is Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Facilities. Thank you, Chair Bernardi, for the opportunity to speak with you today. COVID-19 has impacted all our colleges and universities, and we are dealing with severe financial implications today and into the future. I would like to thank you for your partnership. Minnesota State is incredibly fortunate to have unwavering legislative partners at the state and federal level, and I can't thank you enough for your commitment and support. Before I begin my remarks, I would like to sincerely thank all the frontline workers in our communities and at our campuses, many who are familiar faces and alums of our colleges and universities. I'm pleased to report that yesterday, skills training resumed for future peace officers at several of our campuses, which will graduate approximately 250 students, all who will serve and protect our communities. And I also want to mention Terrence Robertson, an employee of the system office, who was called up for service in the Minnesota National Guard. We appreciate all their service. It was clear from the start of the COVID-19 crisis that we needed a unified system-wide framework to achieve our two paramount goals: protect the health and safety of our faculty, staff, and students, and ensure our students successfully finish the semester. I would like to comment on the amazing work that has been done by faculty, staff, and campus leadership teams in a very short period of time. Over 95% of the courses offered this semester were transitioned to an online format, ensuring our students had the opportunity to complete the spring semester. I'm in awe of how our faculty and staff have demonstrated tremendous creativity, innovation, and an entrepreneurial spirit to successfully transition more than 20,000 courses to alternative modes of learning in a mere 2 weeks time frame. A remarkable achievement. However, I do want to speak about our students enrolled in 5% of our courses who will still need some face-to-face instruction to complete their spring courses. Please know that I, the college and university presidents, and faculty and staff are committed to ensuring their successful completion. Our colleges and universities pride themselves on being the social engine for Minnesota's economy, and we remain focused and committed to all of our students' success. 7 weeks ago, we weren't sure what spring semester would look like and how we would get our students across the finish line. There was great uncertainty, but we came together, embodying the very spirit that makes higher education unique. We came together as a community of learners. It is that very same spirit that will guide us into the future. There are numerous examples of innovation and creativity of our faculty and staff. I would like to mention just a couple. At Minnesota State University, Moorhead, the library created a textile librarian and live chat so students continue to have access to research librarians. Technical programs, such as at Minneapolis College, have made the shift to remote delivery by offering welding through digital platforms. The impact of COVID-19 crisis unequivocally affects students' academic learning, but the impact also extends far beyond the classroom. Long-standing inequities in access to higher education and in student success for low-income and for students from communities of color are further magnified as a result of COVID-19. Many of our students do not have access to technology and need remote access to important student support services. Our colleges and universities continue to be proactive and intentional in providing access to important student support services, particularly through an equity lens. I would like to share with you some of the ways our colleges and universities stepped up to serve these students. All campuses have been open to these students to ensure access to Wi-Fi, printing services, and food pantry. Many of our colleges and universities purchased laptops to lend to students who don't have them to ensure they continue their studies at a safer distance. Resources and services that our schools continue to provide include online tutoring and other form of academic support, food pantries, emotional and wellness support, and housing support. Obviously, the impact of COVID-19 pandemic underscores the importance of our Equity 2030 efforts, and they permeate all our strategic and operational structures. It is also imperative during these particularly anxious times that all of us work towards building a safe, supportive climate free from racial hostility for all of our students. The question across all institutions of higher education is whether these institutions are public, private, technical, or liberal arts programs. It's very simply, what will we look like going into the future? Will we see an increase in the delivery of online programs? What will learning look into the future? What new technologies will rise from this crisis to become the foundation in the way we educate? These are the very questions we have been examining, and it has been the focus of our conversation. Our ability to be nimble and innovative has been showcased time and again over the past few weeks. As Albert Einstein said, in the middle of difficulty lies an opportunity. We all can agree that the last 7 weeks have been extremely difficult for all involved, both personally and professionally. But how we as an organization choose to respond to the future is our opportunity. It is the opportunity to expand the collaborations that have grown out of this adversity. It is the opportunity to remind ourselves of the resilient nature and spirit of our students and of our campus community. It is important that we remember that it is not just the 350,000 students across the state that are counting on us to seize the opportunity, or our 16,000 faculty and staff, but also the 47 communities in which our colleges and universities reside. At each and every one of our campuses, we are positioned to continue to be the partner of choice and to be the partners to lead our communities, our regions, and our state into the future. Many of our colleges and universities have stepped up in the fight against COVID, pitching in and providing critical resources, supplies, and housing for medical personnel. Some examples include Winona State University is being considered for use as an overflow hospital for non-critical patients in the event COVID-19 infections overwhelm hospital capacity in southeast Minnesota. Alexandria Technical and Community College is leading a community-wide mask-making effort, sewing masks for the area healthcare workers. St. Cloud State University faculty members in the Department of Environmental and Technological Studies made face shields for the CentraCare employees to fill their request for 750 shields per week. The work being done by all our colleges and universities across Minnesota is gratifying and reflects our commitment to the communities we serve. However, the work that we are doing at our 54 campuses is not without serious financial challenges. Challenges we shared with you before COVID-19 came here. These challenges have posed a serious threat to our financial standing. The total direct impact of additional expenses and lost revenue due to COVID-19 for the remainder of this fiscal year ranges from $35 million to $40 million. Vice Chancellor Bill Mackey will be discussing with you the three budget scenarios for fiscal year 2021 that range up to $194 million lost in revenue. You may have been hearing about the difficult decisions some of our campuses have been making. For example, one of our campuses had to make some very painful budget decisions due to a projected $6 million budget shortfall for fiscal year 2022. They recently announced they would need to eliminate 66.5 jobs, 11% of its full-time positions, and close or suspend 10 majors. Other campuses are also facing similar financial pressures. These financial decisions have been painful for our campus community even before COVID-19 arrived here. The COVID-19 crisis is an added dimension to the already difficult financial situation we are dealing with. Some initial steps we have begun to make, including the decision to freeze all administrators' pay for fiscal year 2020 and for fiscal year 2021. I will take a voluntary salary reduction of 10%. We have also implemented a hiring freeze in the system office. Our colleges and universities are planning almost all their summer classes online. Technical programs will be moved to alternative modes of delivery, and any face-to-face component will adhere to the safety and social distancing protocols in place at the time courses start. All campuses will be open for fall semester with robust program offerings in all areas, including career and technical education and workforce development training. our colleges and universities are balancing the tension between consistency and certainty at the system level and campus discretion in responding to local needs and conditions. All classes are being re-engineered to generate more flexibility and adaptability should the need arise. And we are thinking creatively about what the fall semester might look like. The challenge in front of us is not to hold on to what was or has been, but to learn from this change and recognize and embrace what could be and to position ourselves to lead into this opportunity. But we will need your support more than ever before. Thank you, Chair Bernardi, and members of the committee for your time. With your permission, Chair Bernardi, I would like to turn it over now to Vice Chancellor Bill Mackey to go into greater detail about the financial pressures our colleges and universities are facing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chancellor Malhotra, for your testimony, and welcome to the committee, Vice Chancellor Mackey. You may state your name and affiliation for the record and proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Mackey, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Facilities, Minnesota State. Chair Bernardi, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today regarding the short and long-term financial implications that the effects of COVID-19 has and will have on Minnesota State colleges and universities. The actions taken since February 28th, along with the unpredictability of the length of the COVID-19 crisis, has put immediate financial pressures on our colleges and universities and has created an unprecedented amount of uncertainty in planning for fiscal year 2021. While federal funding will supplement a portion of the lost revenue, help support the disruption to our students, and cover some additional expenditures, the financial scenarios for fiscal year 2021 will be anything but typical when it is time to present the operating budget to our Board of Trustees later this spring. As the Chancellor mentioned, we have estimated short-term financial implications of COVID-19 to be between $35 and $40 million between March 1st and June 30th of 2020. We've organized these into six categories. The first, direct costs absorbed due to COVID-19 were as a result of the suspension of international travel. Many institutions had to cancel study abroad trips, and some colleges and universities also had to promptly bring students and faculty home that were involved in programs in countries that were high risk. Subsequently, in mid-March 2020, all out-of-state travel was also suspended, and both the NCAA and the NJCAA canceled their spring competitive season. The total estimated cost that was absorbed or will be absorbed by our colleges and universities due to these cancellations range from $2 to $3 million. The second area and the highest cost item is related to student safety in our dormitories for $17 million. And this is the cost of refunding students' room and board fees on a prorated basis so that they could disperse to safer living conditions. Schools have insufficient revenue fund balances to absorb all these refunds in their residential life accounts while still maintaining an adequate fund balance to cover fixed costs such as debt service. The third area relates to immediate campus safety for $530,000. And these are additional cleaning costs for our residence halls and other facilities that still need to be used for the students remaining on campus, our essential employees, as well as some of the in-person instruction that we are currently conducting in law enforcement and that we hope to be conducting on a limited basis after May 4th. This enables our students and faculty to work in a safe environment. The fourth area is related to student support services, $3.2 million. The continuation of key support activities, moving them from a face-to-face format to a virtual format. The most common needs that we've seen more demand for are additional academic advising and personal counseling. We also have additional costs for having a small number of students remaining on our campus in our residence halls because they're unable to return to a permanent home. Currently, that amount is approximately 600 students across our six residential universities are 5 to 7% of the overall residence hall population. The fifth area has to do with academic and staff continuity support, and this is to provide the necessary continuation of operations to complete core activities and achieve the goal of enabling our students to complete their spring semester, along with other hard costs to enable distance work for faculty and others to work from remote locations. The last area, the sixth area, is the cancellation of several events, training, workshops, and camps. The stay-at-home order that's currently in place has resulted in a significant reduction of continuing education and customized training activities by our colleges and universities. Without taking expenses into account, we expect to see a reduction of 60 to 75% in training the remainder of this fiscal year. In addition, many colleges and universities have canceled or postponed longstanding summer events utilized by their communities or camps such as athletic or academic camps that generate auxiliary revenues. We've estimated the revenue loss during this time period to be $7 to $10 million, bringing us to our total of $35 to $40 million between March 1st and the end of the year, end of the fiscal year. The Federal CARES Act, signed into law on March 27th, does provide Minnesota State's colleges and universities with some relief to cover these short-term costs. However, when taking into consideration not only spring semester, but summer session and the projected impact for fall semester, the funding is inadequate to cover all the losses and additional costs, especially at our residential colleges and universities. The CARES Act provided $14.2 billion in funds to institutions of higher education. The most significant portion of that funding provides $12.56 billion to go directly to institutions using a formula based on student enrollment. The formula is weighted significantly on the number of full-time students who are Pell eligible and also takes into consideration the total population of the institution and the number of students who were enrolled full-time online before the coronavirus outbreak. The total amount for the 30 colleges and 7 universities of Minnesota State is $93.361 million. These funds are awarded directly to our colleges and universities through the Title IV distribution system. 50% of the funding, or $46.681 million, is reserved to provide students with emergency financial aid grants to help cover expenses related to the disruption of campus operations due to the coronavirus. The CARES Act provided institutions with significant discretion on how to award this emergency assistance to our students. Our system provided guidelines to our colleges and universities that had three major areas. One was an across-the-board grant to eligible students to account for their disruption for the coronavirus. The second component was a higher across-the-board or an additional across-the-board amount to our students who are Pell-eligible students and others that are in and demonstrate significant need. And then a third component was reserving a portion of that funding to go into an emergency loan fund to cover expenses that are not covered by the first two areas and to allow for financial aid directors and others on campus to use professional judgment to help our students in most need. The other 50% of the CARES funding, the other $46.681 million, is available for institutional use. Colleges and universities may use these funds to cover any costs associated with significant changes to the delivery of instruction due to the coronavirus. These costs were ones that first incurred on or after March 13th, the date of the proclamation of national emergency. Permissible costs include reimbursement of costs related to refunds made to students for housing, food, or other services that the campus could no longer provide, or for hardware, software, or internet connectivity that the campus may have purchased on behalf of students or provided to students. Each college and university is currently working on a plan on how they will utilize these funds. They have 1 year to use these funds, and it will be part of the revised 2020 budget and their FY21 budget that will be approved later this spring by our Board of Trustees. Colleges and universities are also currently updating their enrollment projections for the upcoming academic year. due to the current impact of COVID-19, it is creating a great deal of uncertainty in planning for summer session and fall semester. We previously had expected our enrollment to be stable between fiscal year 20 and 21 and are now expecting a system enrollment decline based on COVID-19. The level of decline at each institution will vary considerably based on their academic program mix and whether or not the campus is heavily reliant on a residential and student life component for their enrollment. In this unprecedented situation, we're continually studying variables that are our main influencers to enrollment to see how they will play out in this unprecedented environment. What will our retention rate be of our current students? The number of new students for fall semester, our number of international students, the impact of the national, state, and regional economy on our institutions, particularly our two-year colleges. And lastly, what is our ability to return to in-person instruction in the areas we're not able to deliver remotely? When we were planning on having stable enrollment between 20 and 21, we still expected to have a $20 million structural gap for fiscal year 2021. We have now modeled system-wide scenarios for 5, 10, and 20% enrollment declines. The structural gap is estimated at $74 million for a 5% decline, $157 million for a 10% decline, and $279 million for a 20% decline. These scenarios also take into account the level of on-campus services we would be providing this fall. For example, the 20% scenario assumes that the occupancy rates in our residence halls would be in the 10 to 20% range for fall semester. We are looking at multiple options to ease the revenue reductions we will face in fiscal year 21. Some of these options are not ones we would generally entertain in the process of developing our annual budget. We are looking at reprioritizing our FY21 allocations to temporarily meet the revenue gap that we will experience this fall, along with exploring options to mitigate a tuition increase for all our students. An example might be utilizing state appropriation that is earmarked for a specific purpose, such as leveraged equipment, and utilizing those for operating funds temporarily in lieu of tuition revenue for a year. On an annual basis, as our colleges and universities also collectively reallocate $20 to $30 million to reduce their base operating budgets or to invest in emerging priorities. These reallocations might involve delaying capital investments, a strategic initiative, or other planned long-term investments. Some of our colleges and universities are currently using fund balance to cover some of the immediate shortfalls and may plan to use a portion for fiscal year 2021. They would be planning to reallocate fund balance to cover their projected enrollment loss. In the event enrollment loss comes in more than projected for fall, colleges and universities also might have to use a portion of their cash reserves to cover the sudden revenue shortfall. By our board policies, each college or university has a 5 to 7% general fund reserve. We need to balance through the short term while also ensuring we have the capacity we need in the future. Over-reliance on our fund balance and reserves could put us in a situation where our credit rating is impacted for our revenue fund or individual accreditation is put at risk at one of our colleges and universities. Our colleges and university presidents continue to monitor the situation and will plan accordingly to balance these short-time needs with long-term financial sustainability. Chair Bernardi and committee members, that concludes our formal remarks, and we are now prepared to stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Vice Chancellor Mackey. You're very thorough, and you answered our questions like we asked you to. We have about 5 minutes for questions from our members, and I'd like to ask our committee administrator, Miller, if we have members that would like to be recognized.
Madam Chair, Representative Lean.
Representative Lean, you may proceed, and please, staff, take Representative Lean off mute.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate both you being here, Chancellor Malhotra and Vice Chancellor Mackey. It was alluded to some of the campus cuts and some of the campus issues that were happening before the COVID-19 crisis really set in Minnesota, and that campus that you spoke about, the $6 million shortfall and the cuts and program closures and things, that's the Moorhead, Minnesota State University Moorhead campus. So there's a lot of pain right now, a lot of folks wondering what's going to happen. Of course, these cuts are not going to take place until after next school year, so there is time to try to find some ways, figure some ways out of this. But from what I understand right now, as it's planned, a lot of those cuts and closures are going to fall on faculty and staff. Now, I heard the chancellor mention that there was going to be an administrative pay freeze for academic year 2021. What else is happening, or what other guidance is the system giving to individual campuses so that a lot of these cuts and shortfalls are equitably distributed, you know, in terms of cuts and shortfalls are equitably distributed around administrators as well as the faculty and staff?
Chancellor Malhotra, and staff, please unmute his, please unmute him. Chancellor Malhotra, you may proceed.
Yeah. Chair Bernardi, Representative Lynn, you're absolutely correct. I was referring to Minnesota State University Moorhead in the example I gave. A couple of thoughts, and then I'll come directly to your question. One is, that there are some long-term demographics and dynamics which had created structural deficits over a period of time, and those adjustments have to be made. And as I alluded to in my remarks, I'll be the first to admit those are very painful, very tough decisions, but they are needed for programmatic and financial sustainability over the long haul, though it is little comfort to those individuals who are adversely impacted by those decisions. With regard to your question, currently all our campuses, all 37 of our institutions, are in the process of developing their fiscal year 21 budget. And that process has become a little more complex as a result of COVID-19, generally we are fairly good at projecting our enrollment levels within very short bands of error, but with COVID-19 that process has become increasingly difficult too. We are hopeful that as more information comes in during the budget formulation process, that some strategies would also emerge as to how our each of our colleges and universities adjust to the loss of revenue, to the needed expenses. And without a doubt, that would be tough. And I wholeheartedly agree with you, Representative Leon, that all segments of the campus community will have to be treated equitably when it comes to making the necessary adjustments. It is my understanding, and part of it is that, Representative Leon, that 70% of our budgets are in personnel. So if we have to make any significant budgetary adjustments, they necessarily come to personnel adjustments. It's also my understanding, Representative Leon, that at MSU Moorhead, there were cuts in the number of administrator positions also. Let me look into that exact question. And I'll be more than glad to get back to you and see provide you more details as to how MSU Moorhead is meeting its budgetary deficit.
Okay, thank you, Excuse me, Representative Lane, do you have a follow-up?
Madam Chair, thank you. I won't ask another question, but just to make a statement, Chancellor, thank you for that. I personally do appreciate the job that you have been doing for the system. You know, I appreciate the job President Blackhurst has been doing for the Morehead campus. I know these are difficult, very painful decisions, and I just really think faculty and staff would appreciate any information that can be shared in terms of how this will be handled so that the burden of those cuts do not fall solely on faculty and staff. Those are the folks on the front lines delivering education for our students and communities, and to every extent possible, we need to continue to support those folks. So thank you.
Okay, and thank you, Minnesota State, and for presenting today. We're not going to be able to address members' further questions at this point in order to keep on schedule and be able to listen to the testimony from the University of Minnesota. So I apologize for that, members. I know our Minnesota State is very accessible to us, and I would think that we could get some of your questions answered afterwards if possible. So we are now going to move on to
thank
the University.
You,
yes, thank you very much, Chancellor Malhotra and Vice Chancellor Mackey, for your testimony. We have President Gable and Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations, Brian Burnett, from the University of Minnesota. Staff will unmute their lines. Once they're unmuted, please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Bernardi. This is Joan Gable with the University of Minnesota, Ranking Member Nornis, members of the House Higher Education Committee. It's very nice to be able to visit with all of you today, leveraging these alternative communication formats, and I hope that you are all healthy, safe, and well. I'd also like to thank and acknowledge any members of the University's Board of Regents who are joining with us remotely. Members of the committee, the last few months have certainly resulted in a different legislative session than I thought my first session working with all of you as the president of the university would be. And I know that you all have been working incredibly hard on behalf of the state, and we're very honored and grateful to be able to partner with you in that effort. It feels like a very long time ago since the last time we were together to discuss the bonding bill. It was only 10 weeks. I thought maybe it was 10 years or 10 minutes, and sometimes I'm not entirely sure. But in the interim, the University of Minnesota has acted very swiftly to respond to the challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic. We've taken some very important steps to protect the health of our students, faculty, and staff, many of which are the same as what you heard my colleagues describe to you earlier with regard from to working at home and moving students to all distributed learning formats. We've also acted quickly to reduce a lot of our overall expenditures and expenses. We also prohibited non-essential university-funded travel outside of Minnesota. That prohibition continues until May 31st. We're going to revisit soon to look into whether this needs an extension. We, by directing students and faculty and staff home, helped flatten the curve on the spread of COVID-19, but that also has resulted in some reduction in our utility expenses and other on-campus expenses. More than 200 of our senior leaders across the system volunteered to take a salary reduction equivalent to 1 week's pay between now and the end of the fiscal year on June 30th. My cabinet and I will take a 10% salary reduction starting June 1st into the next fiscal year and continuing until the university returns to normal operations. We know that those payroll reductions are not the entirety of the sacrifice we'll need to make, but we wanted to do this early and clearly to represent to our entire university community that this will be tough, but that it starts with us and set the proper tone from the top. We suspended all new hiring until further notice with extremely limited exceptions. We also have frozen any merit increases and will not have any bonuses in fiscal year 21 for employees system-wide. This is accepted with our contract employees and collective bargaining employees. So in sum, the range of actions that we've noted will provide somewhere in the range of $40 million in cost savings. This was our first tranche of effort, as we know we are going to be facing current and future financial challenges. Looking ahead, we will be going into large system-wide virtual celebration of commencement on May 16th. Classes this summer will be offered online. Non-academic activities this summer, like summer camps, are canceled for between now and June 30th, and we'll revisit after July 1st. We also implemented a tuition freeze. This is a challenging thing for us to do, but we need to meet our students where they are, and we also need to be competitive in order to attract new students and retain the students that we have. We have created very expanded resources in our student emergency funds. We already had student emergency funds on all of the campuses, but through the generosity of many of our supporters and a few things we were able to do on campus, we've greatly increased the resources in those funds and have given away emergency funds to more than 230 students. And then, as you know, we pushed out refunds for housing and dining across the system in what was a bit of a tortured process, but as we learn how to navigate with the information flow and challenges of this pandemic, reached the proper outcome with appreciation for the advocacy and support we received during the process, and returned approximately $34 million directly to our students. As previously discussed, the CARES Act funding will have a big impact on us too at the federal level. We're slated to receive approximately $36 million from the federal government, $18 million of which will go directly to students. We're working on our process for distributing those funds now that guidance has come in from the Department of Education. And we're also working with great appreciation with the governor's office and Commissioner Olson and our partners at Minnesota State regarding the CARES Act funding distributed to the state in support of education, with the hope that some of that funding will come to higher education. For the future, we have modeled our budget with a best, middle, and worst case scenario, best case being that things are essentially normal in the fall, although we know that what we would have previously considered normal is going to be a new normal going forward. Our out-of-state students and international students are likely to be coming back or joining us in smaller numbers, and we've assumed that even in our best case scenario. Middle case scenario has hybrid activity in the fall to be determined based on the public health advice that we receive. And then worst case scenario is that we are unable to work face-to-face through the entirety of the fall semester. In the worst case, we're estimating our losses at approximately $324 million. So as you can imagine, we remain extremely grateful for our partnership and the support from the state and the support we receive from the federal government as well, and are grateful to be able to rely on this as we look to the future, both in terms of the appropriation and in terms of the possibility of bonding in this session. I'll state that our bonding request remains intact, and something that we would like to highlight, even though it may be somewhat counterintuitive because we are in a position to move very quickly on bonding. We think that the bonding is a way to stimulate the economy as we navigate through this process. We are ready to go with making sure that our campus remains a place of choice for our students, faculty, and staff, and serves the state in the best possible way, and it puts people to work in ways that we know our economy and individual families need so much. In order to navigate through how these decisions will be made, we have empaneled working groups, one focused on academic and research, the other focused on finance and operations, with shared governance representation across those groups. They will advise me, and then I, in turn, will advise the board on their recommendations, so that as we make the difficult decisions that you know we're facing and that you've heard my colleagues describe so well, we have real voice in all of the communities that we're mission-bound to serve and make those decisions and recommendations accordingly. But in the midst of these challenges, I do want to make sure that we point out that there is good news. We've been capturing that with the UMN Proud hashtag. If you want to feel good about the role of higher ed and why we all work so hard across the state to serve our students and to do the research that we do and to do the service and outreach that we do, you would see the partnership that the U has with Mayo and the governor's office and the legislature on ramping up testing. You'd see the recently FDA-approved ventilator, the Coventor that is scalable and inexpensive to produce, all of the pharmaceutical testing that we're doing, the service of our Medical Reserve Corps, and the tremendous work that our students are doing. So in closing, I want to thank all of you and your staff and everything that is going on across the state in support of the state and higher education in the state. And with that, I'll pause and see, Madam Chairwoman, if there are any questions. Hello. Madam Chair, you might still be on mute.
Thank you very much. I'm off mute now. Okay. I think I just want to clarify about testifiers today. Will you be the only one testifying, or will Senior Vice President also be testifying, or just be yielding questions?
Madam Chairwoman, I'm the only one testifying, but Senior Vice President Burnett is available for questions if there are any that he is in the best position to answer.
Okay, thank you very much. So I would like to go to Committee Chair Miller and ask her if we have any members who have questions.
Madam Chair, Representative Gomez wishes to be recognized.
Thank you. Committee Chair Miller, I'd like to recognize Representative Gomez. We'll have staff take her off mute, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to make a couple of comments. You know, I feel like the crisis that we're in is really like reveals some real issues around executive compensation in higher ed. I think like many Minnesotans, I can't remember if it was maybe like a week or two ago, time's kind of hard to figure out right now, but I saw in the paper that, the U of M football coach is taking an $86,000 salary cut, right? It was like in the, and that sounds like a lot of money. That's more money than the average family in Minnesota makes in a year, right? $70,000 is our median income in Minnesota, which is high to the national median income. So I read the article. That's how much the football coach makes in 1 week. He makes $4.5 million a year. And, you know, I just, wealth and income inequality, economic inequality, to me is like the defining issue of our time in addition to climate change. And one of the things that has led to this truly unprecedented level of wealth and income inequality in this country, where 40% of families in this country couldn't absorb a $400 unexpected cost on their average budget, one of the drivers of that, or one of the sort of, I mean, maybe it's not accurate to call it a driver, but like a reflection of that economic reality that people live with, is in executive compensation, right, which has just gotten completely out of hand. One of the ways that we think about executive compensation and kind of evaluating the inequality within an institution or a business is about the ratio between the lowest and highest paid employees. And we would have a really, really bad ratio, just to be clear. Like, it would be probably, like, as bad as some of the really terrible industries that we talk about with respect to this, like where you have, you know, a retail CEO making millions of dollars while their frontline workers are making minimum wage, which is $7.15 an hour or whatever. And so it's really distressing to see public resources basically being used to deepen economic and wealth inequality, because that's what's happening here, right? When we have frontline workers or adjunct faculty even who aren't able to make a living, and then we have, you know, executive or you know, kind of upper-level admin and regent professors and various kind of like people making $250,000, $500,000 a year. You know, for me personally, I guess I just want to say that, like, you know, it's really distressing to see the trend about disinvestment from higher ed, especially in the last, 40 years since the Reagan tax cuts of 1984. We really have had a regime of austerity with respect to investment in our public institutions. And higher ed is included in that, right? You used to be able to just, like, work a job and pay for college, and that's just not the reality anymore. So seeing, you know, 40, 50 years of declining investment in higher education while seeing this also completely unprecedented increase in executive compensation, it's insulting to the public. Reading about somebody trumpeting an $85,000 cut to your salary when you make $4.5 million a year is insulting to the public. And I want you to know that it makes it really difficult for legislators like me who, like, I want us to adequately fund our public good. I don't believe that you know, an heiress who inherits money from their billionaire father or grandfather should pay a lower tax rate than a custodial worker at the University of Minnesota. And I come to the Capitol and I fight for that every day. I fight for us to ask those to whom much have been given to pay their fair share for the public good, which includes higher education. But it's very difficult to do that when you have, you know, golden parachute after golden parachute and these really, like, ridiculous, I believe, executive salaries. And it's hard to hear over and over, and I've only been on this committee, right, for one term, but this idea of, like, oh, well, this is the market in higher education, it's just an inadequate explanation when the public is being asked to contribute to an institution that's supposed to benefit students and, like, is actually paying out millions and millions of dollars in high-level executive compensation. So I guess I'm just, like, I feel like this moment reveals that and reveals the fact that, like, I actually don't want the University of Minnesota to buy into that, to say, oh, this is just, like, what higher ed is like. I want us to actually lead and lift up the fact that, like, that this investment in higher ed is driving wealth and income inequality in our country. So I'm sorry, that was, like, a long... long-winded statement, but, you know, when publicly funded institutions, whether they're the university or hospitals, hand out golden parachutes, overly compensate executives in a way that's, like, really disproportionate to the lowest paid employee, it makes it really hard for us to do our job to fight for the funding that's needed to keep the university affordable to students, to make sure that our students are not graduating with levels of debt that are unsustainable compared to the salaries that they're able to garner from this degree. And so I'll stop there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Conference unlocked.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. I would go to Committee Administrator Miller and ask if there is another member with a question.
Madam Chair, Representative Lucero wishes to be recognized.
Representative Lucero, the staff will unmute. You may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Gomez. I hope that you can join me and others to slash the administrative overhead costs of these and other government employees. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. I would like to ask Committee Administrator Miller if there is someone else on that would like to be recognized.
Madam Chair, there are no further requests.
Okay, I do have a question myself, and my question that I wanted to ask is a little bit more about the university's reserves. I think you talked a little bit about maybe about reallocations. If you didn't, I'd like you to discuss that as well. But if you could talk about the use of your reserves
and the types of the reserves that you do have during this pandemic to get through. Who would like to answer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll defer to Senior Vice President Burnett.
Okay, Senior Vice President Burnett, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, and members of the committee. In response to your question, Chair Bernardi, as we've detailed in reports to the committee in prior inquiries, the university has about $1 billion in reserves. But as you know, that comes in very different forms. It's some of it's federal money, some of it's money that we are holding in trust for others. But a lot of it is pledged and there for days like today, where we're going to have to use some of these reserves to help us see through this very difficult time the university is facing. I would also remind members that the university has about $1.4 billion of long-term outstanding debt that the $1 billion in reserves helps us cover and maintains our credit rating at a AA1, which is just below the state of Minnesota's credit rating. So we do have reserves that will be put into force to help buffer this current pandemic and the impact it has on the university. This is what we have these for times like this, to work through this. And we will all be making other difficult decisions in addition to some modest use of our reserves as we work through this with our Board of Regents.
Conference locked.
And just a follow-up, does that mean, like, are you talking about, like, reallocations or other types of decisions to help manage your budget?
Chair Bernardi, like, yes. And members, the budget. Yes, I'm sorry. This is Senior Vice President Burnett. The budget we're building to take to the Regents next week, the first look at it for our board is a balanced budget and includes over $20 million in additional cuts on top of reallocations, on top of the $90 million that we've done over the last 6 years. So there are a number of reallocations we have made to get a balanced budget, especially with the impact that we're seeing on softening of tuition and other things that could be happening to us. So, yes, we are doing, as President Gable noted, we are doing salary freezes, we are doing hiring freezes, and we are making cuts across units totaling at least $20 million just to bring a balanced budget as a starting point for our board. The other piece, as President Gable noted, we'll be bringing contingency plans that if our assumptions are incorrect, we'll have ways to pivot our budget so that we continue to maintain a balanced budget into the fall and next spring to serve our students and our faculty and this state.
Thank you very much. We're just approaching the conclusion of our meeting, and did any more questions come in, Ms. Miller?
Madam Chair, there are no further requests.
Okay, and I was going to circle back to Minnesota State if anyone had questions, and I found out that no one did. So we were able to answer our members' questions and want to give kudos to our testifiers today to be so succinct and to follow our time recommendations. We appreciate that. And we also want to thank your leadership and to the front lines and our staff and to our researchers and people who are helping our community through this COVID-19 pandemic. It was heartening to hear the wonderful things for protective PPE as well as research and testing that our universities are doing, and we want to thank you for that. And I know you all care deeply about our state, and you know we all want each other to succeed, and I want to thank you for that work and just really let the students out there know that we are here for you, and we want to do, we want everyone to get through this crisis the best we can, and working together and is very important in being innovative and nimble during these times. So thank you for your leadership and moving Minnesota forward. With that, I want to thank our members for being here and to everyone who has listened to our hearing today. We appreciate that, and we want to wish you and your families to be safe and well, and the meeting is now adjourned.